They don't need a man who's got it made. Always looking for that renegade. I calls it like I sees it. A spade is a spade. A good man is a thing of yesterday. Yeah. They don't want them a
good sir.
Good morning, Sean.
How are you?
I'm doing great, actually.
Live from Tottenham.
Live from the porch in Tottenham again. Yeah.
That'll be the title of a book someday.
Yeah.
Live from the porch in Tottenham.
Hopefully. Hopefully.
Ah, you look good. I know we've talked a little already, but that's okay. I like your
yeah.
shirt. It's a cool shirt. It looks very summery.
It's kind of summery. Very hot here. It's a linen-y, so it's light. I've been just trying to get outside. I wear a lot of blues, and I just decided I was, you know, at Winners or whatever, and I saw this pink shirt. I'm like, ah, that's for me. I'm gonna get that. So,
well, any of our American
how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm
yeah.
I almost said it twice. I've been watching our previous podcast, and I have a tendency
yeah.
to repeat it. It's like you say, "How are you?" I'm good. I'm good. I'm good.
Too good. Well,
I'm
you got
like,
too
it's
good.
like I'm Shawnee two time. Like,
yeah.
so I'm trying to stop that.
Okay.
But yeah, you know what? I'm doing all right.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoy podcast morning. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, me too.
I enjoy doing this podcast with you.
Yeah.
We've had some great feedback, some
yeah.
fans, so it's been nice, you know.
It's fun.
I keep waiting for the advertisers and the sponsors, but not yet. Not yet. You never know.
When the time is right.
So we're going to tackle a tough issue this morning, but an important issue. We're going to talk about depression.
We are.
Have you got a definition for us this morning?
I do. And it's funny, you know, leading into this, we had a little chit chat before and, you know, both of us are kind of smiling and laughing and yet we're going to talk about depression, something that we've both experienced in our lives. And,
absolutely.
I mean, I honestly, how many, are there any people who haven't had depression? I'm sure everybody
liars
at some time has had it. So I'll read the definition to start us off here. Depressive disorder, also known as depression, is a common mental disorder. It involves a depressed mood or loss of pleasure or interest in activities for long periods of time. Depression is different from regular mood changes and feelings about everyday life. And there's a little follow-up underneath. What is the definition of becoming depressed? And I wanted to read this too. If you have been experiencing some of the following signs and symptoms most of the day or nearly every day for at least 2 weeks, you may have depression. Persistent, sad, anxious, or empty mood. Feelings of hopelessness or pessimism. Feelings of irritability, frustration, or restlessness.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm more familiar than I wish I was with a lot of those. That's a lot. That's a lot, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think hopelessness is the one that hits me the hardest. That's usually my biggest problem. So
I think the thing that I took away from it when reading it was it's because I just mentioned that most people have been depressed, but it's when you have that loss of pleasure for long periods of time. And then in the second definition, it said for at least 2 weeks. And so I find that that's really a lot. That's really the crux of it. It's when you are really sitting in it for long periods of time that it just becomes this hamster wheel of negative thoughts, negative self-talk, And you know, that's when it really becomes a problem. If it's a day, two
Yeah,
days,
it's a bad
okay,
yeah.
not so bad.
2 weeks though doesn't even seem 2 weeks seems like a cakewalk. I mean, I've been depressed for 2 years, two decades, like,
Yeah.
and it's hard to be depressed. It's being sad and depressed is exhausting. It's
It
exhausting.
is.
It
It
wears
is.
you out,
It is.
especially when I'm in sales and I have a family who depend on me, and I have customers and a
Yeah.
job that I have to be upbeat. So I spend my whole life depressed and then faking it.
Yeah.
Well, that is really exhausting.
Really exhausting. Yeah.
I heard years ago, fake it till you make it, fake it till you make it. Well, that's fine, except
Yeah.
you eventually hope to make it.
Exactly.
But when you don't, and it's literally been decades,
Yeah.
not exaggerating, but
No. Nope.
decades, it's
Yeah.
exhausting. It's exhausting. And it leads to some pretty dark places.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we're here
Yeah,
to discuss.
I thought about a question actually related directly to depression that I wanted to ask you that I reflected on for myself. And the question is, when did you realize, like at what age or at what point in your life did you realize that you were depressed?
What day did I meet you? No, it was, I'm 54.
I'll tell you, like,
I was in my mid-20s.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about highs and lows in a previous episode, and I remember, you know, talking about meeting Shonda, and you were on your, you had your Harley, and you're like, those obviously sounded like great times. So the assumption is that you weren't stacking up days where you felt depressed. You may have had days. Everybody, I'm sure, did.
Yeah, you hit you, that was a very good, that was a good bad time in my life. It was
Yeah.
good financially.
Yeah.
I was making good money, and you're right, I
Yeah.
had Harley in a new truck, and we were going up to see AC/DC with you and Mike and Billy, and we were having some fun. But a lot of that, I was trying to buy my way into some happiness because of my mom's suicide. And my mom committed suicide, and I went to get some help right away. I
How
went.
old were you? Sorry, I don't know the timeline on that.
Well, that was not as early as I just said, but it was 21 years ago. I'm 54, so 44, 33. I was 33.
33. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I dealt with some sadness, but it was on some other things that we can talk about. It wasn't a real sadness.
Yeah.
After my mom's suicide, I went to get some help. And I didn't, I went to one session. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't, never went back, should have gone back.
Of course.
Then I, cause I went to 21 years of just, so I was trying to buy my way into some happiness there for a while. And it was just, I was on a spending spree, like just anything to distract myself. And I remember I would sit in my office and a certain song would come on and Shonda come in there and just find me just in a ball. Like I just like, I mean, it really crushed me. And then I'm not going to start bashing my dad again, but my dad did some stuff that was hard on me after, including leaving me alone in the business. I remember people were like, "Oh, you must be happy now. You got the business. You got the big bucks." I didn't want the business. I wanted my partner. Like I depended on dad. It was too much for one guy. It was too much. And I wanted my dad to stay with me. And listen, he didn't slash couldn't, whatever. But it still leaves the fact that I was there holding the bag and I did my best. I think I did a good job. But, you know, that depression, because I didn't deal with it properly through counselors and doctors and groups, I ended up turning to drugs and I become a drug addict. And that worked for a while. Those drugs I was taking, they made me happy for a while. I say that all the time. Like I had a 14-year addiction. Well, you know, the first 4 years, they weren't bad. Like I wasn't bad at all, but pretty soon the drugs became the problem and the solution. And
of
that's
course.
a problem.
Yeah.
When
yeah, that's
the only thing they were solving was them, you know, and I couldn't get off of them. So,
yeah. And that's, that's the hamster wheel of addiction that we know, we've come to know, right? You mask the problem with the drugs or alcohol, or like you say, you know, buying things, eating, all any kind of, you know, addictive disorder is all a way of masking a problem that we have inside. It's all external. We think the external stuff is gonna fix us inside, but at the end of the day, all you're doing is delaying the work that you have to do on the inside, right?
Yes, and when you have a family, it's even worse, because my family, you know, at Christmas I was buying the kids lots of stuff, and I was buying Shonda stuff, but I wasn't present. I wasn't here. Even when I was here, I just wasn't here. It was just like, my son called me on this years later. Like, you know, I was like, oh, here's a new video game. Oh, here's a new computer. Like, you know, but I wasn't here because I was gone. All I could think about was my shit, you know?
Yeah. And we've mentioned, I mentioned it on a previous podcast. It's a, you know, you're a human doing, not a human being. You're just doing. You're not necessarily being, you're not like being true to yourself. And just going back to your timeline there, you know, like, again, I'm very chronological. We've talked about this. It's 21 years that you're basically saying when your depression started. 14 years of that, you were in active addiction. And now 7 years of that, you've been sober. So, you know, a third of that period, you've now been sober. So I would ask you then, like, the follow-up to that would be, have you felt less depressed in the last 7 years? Like, was your depression greater in those 14 years than it is in the 7 years, despite the fact that you were masking it with your addiction?
I would, honestly, I would say, except for the, like, the last few years of my addiction, where I don't know if that was depression or just total, just addiction. Like, I mean, those drugs, I was taking so many drugs, it was killing me. Like, so I can't really talk about that. That was the worst period of my life.
Yeah.
But as far as being depressed, I'm worse now than I was then. It's been really bad the last few years. I'm not doing anything right now. But I touched on gambling. I was doing that for a while as an addiction. I get to the point, I know how often I'm depressed that I don't want to say it because I know people are tired of hearing it. And I've caught myself in situations where someone will say, "Hey, how are you, Sean?" And instead of saying "fine," because you're not that close to me, and why would I give you my problems? I tell them, "Well, I'm not great."
Yeah.
And I tell them, and I can see their eyes, like, not glazing over. They're nice people. They're concerned, but they're like, "Whoa, I'm not ready or capable or wanting to deal with what you're telling me."
Yeah.
And I also got in the habit of, I never say I'm good. I say I'm okay. I say I'm all right. And I catch, even on emails, people say, "How are you?" And I don't say it looking for attention.
Yeah.
I say it because I can't say I'm good. I can't say it because I do not feel it. I don't feel it so strongly that I can't even lie about it. I can't even fake it. Okay is the best I can do.
Yeah. My takeaway from that actually is that it's probably therapeutic for you to tell people about how you're doing, because otherwise you're internalizing it. So at least by vocalizing it, it helps people understand where you're at. Right.
Right.
And
just before, because I want to ask you a couple things.
Yeah.
Part of depression is also I'm dealing with actual problems. Sure. I'm in the middle of an argument with the government over some back taxes. Yeah. I've got both my legs are bandaged up right now because I'm dealing with diabetic ulcers and problems that I've got to go to the hospital twice a week for. And I'm taking 6 weeks worth of antibiotics and. Yeah. You know, I've got other health problems, some that I'm not going to talk about here, but I'm going for a scope on both ends, which I've never done before because they're seeing a problem, something else happening. You know, I had three strokes a few years ago and I've never recovered from those strokes. They call what I had a blind stroke. So some people have a stroke and half their face droops and they sound bad, which is, thank goodness that didn't happen to me.
Horrific.
But the problem with a blind stroke is people can't see it. So they think you're okay.
Yeah.
But I'm not. My mind never recovered. I don't see things the same. My drive isn't the same. My memory is shot. My feelings, my emotions have been different since then.
Yeah.
So only reason I say all that is, it's yes, I'm depressed, but there are some things that are actually happening in my life that are depressing me. And you know, I had a big fight with my oldest son a couple years ago. It knocked the shit out of me for about 6 to 8 months. I still haven't recovered from it. It wasn't really a fight. He was just upset with me, and it really, I'm not saying he was wrong, it just really hurt me.
Yeah.
And I mean, it really killed me. My beautiful dog, she's in the midst of, you know, I don't think she's going to be around much longer in a couple months. And that's been eating me alive because I love her so much. And you know what? Guess what, Chris? I don't have a monopoly on problems. We all have
no,
them. But I did learn a long time ago that pain is personal. So it doesn't matter. If you come to me right now and you tell me 1,000 things that are 1,000 times worse than what's going on with me,
yeah,
I feel bad for you, but it doesn't take away my problems. We have to deal with our own stuff. Doesn't matter if it doesn't even matter if the whole world's starving. My problems are still my problems, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, going back to when you came out of your addiction and then, you know, got sober, oftentimes coming out of that, there's a lot of wreckage.
There is.
You know, there are debts.
A lot.
There's damage done to relationships. You know, we've climbed into a deep hole. But, you know, what are we doing on a day-to-day basis to get out of that space? And, you know, I you know, I hear you saying that you're more depressed now than you were then. But I think if you ask yourself, are you really depressed right now in this moment? I would probably say that you're not. Like,
not when I'm talking to you. Not when I'm doing this podcast. You caught me on that a few weeks ago. You said, are you sad right now? And I said, not right now.
No. So saying that you're more depressed right now isn't really true. You aren't more depressed right in this moment than you were 10 years ago or 14 or 20 years ago. You're not. You're actually
me on semantics. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
This is the crux of it all. It's, we all know that our thoughts create our realities.
Right.
They do. What you say to yourself in your mind, oftentimes you wouldn't want to share that with anyone. You'd be like, I'm not telling people that. So, you know, a couple books I've mentioned in the past, The Power of Now with Eckhart Tolle. He talks about living in the now. He got to a point in his life, and I think I've been here. I still am to some degree. He got to a point in his life where he actually felt separated from his own self. He was looking at himself in the mirror and he was thinking, who am I? Like, what have I become?
Done that.
He knew that there was something, his true self, there was his true self. And then there was his made up self. Like he had created an identity for himself that he no longer understood. And when I read that, it reminded me of that movie with Jim Carrey, Me, Myself, and Irene. Like, he became someone that he no longer understood.
Right.
Because I think, you know, and this is the progression of life for a lot of people. We're born in a state of near perfection. I mean, when you look at a baby, when you, like, there is nothing, there's no hate. It's really like a baby. It's love. It's a glowing ball of love. And then slowly things start to happen.
Yeah.
And you detach from that.
Yeah.
Like, could you, I mean, it's hard to imagine. No, can you imagine? Yeah. Having this feeling of like exuberance, love, complete happiness, total euphoria. Like, it's almost unimaginable, but it is possible. It's all about how we think and talk to ourselves. Bruce Lee, I love the Bruce Lee quote. I don't think I've mentioned it, but he talks about never talking badly about yourself.
Well, you never catch me doing that.
Because it becomes ingrained. It becomes ingrained. And it becomes ingrained.
I just to catch on that point, because I know a buddy of yours said something about what I was doing, and I really appreciate it. I won't mention his name, but I really appreciated it, and I've been trying to do better. But I've thought for a long time, if I had a friend talk to me the way I talk to me, I'd punch him in the face. I
But
would
no, hey.
never let anybody else talk to me like that.
Oh,
But
shout out to Dave Purdy. Thank
Dave
you, Dave
Purdy, yeah,
Purdy.
he caught me on it, man, and he got me thinking about it. I don't know if he knows how big an influence he's been on my life the last couple of weeks, but he has, because I've been thinking about that constantly.
And it's just a little thought, and it just changes your perception. Because you just can get so deep into your head that it's just like you create a reality and you believe it to be true. You talked about problems with the government and these kind of things. I mean, I think everyone's like they have some tax stuff. They have this and they have that, and
Well, this is
it's not
big
the end of
time.
the world. Like there are solutions. Like there are way. Like that, I don't know. It's. I mean, I know it's not great. Of course, it's not great. But I mean, look, we do the gratitude challenges, the gratitudes these days, right? And isn't it just a wonderful thing every morning or evening or day to just reflect on a few things that we're grateful for,
It
right?
does work because I sometimes force myself to find something. It doesn't come easy, but at
I do
least I
too.
find something. At least I find something. And I think about it. Oh, yeah, I am. But I'll tell you this, Chris, I never lie on those. If I say it, I mean it.
I
So
know, I do
I
too.
find something.
I think it's hard to lie about being grateful for something, right?
It is. It is.
There's an integrity in it because you in order to say it, you have to feel it. You
You
can't fake
do.
it till you make it when it comes to gratitudes. Like
Absolutely. Absolutely.
if you said you were grateful for something and I didn't really believe it, I probably would call you out on
No, you would for sure call me on it.
it.
That's one thing I like about you is you don't let me slide on bullshit. And I like that about you. Sometimes I take it hard. Sometimes it bothers me for a day or two, but I do like the fact that I don't mean you call me on it in a bad way, but you do call me on it. You do. You don't just let it. And I like that about your and my relationship right now anyway, is that we're not the same person. We don't have the exact same beliefs or thought processes or backgrounds or anything, but that's okay. We love each other. We're friends. The important stuff rises to the top, right? So.
We have an honest and open relationship, which is the kind of relationships that are super important. Like they people the the people that you surround yourself with, they can change your life. They can lift you up. They can be honest with you. Like we're all you can't get through this on your own. You can't. So you need
Well, I said this a couple of weeks ago. We're a community. You just talked about babies. Babies can't survive on their own. Human beings can't survive on their own. We're a community. But I was thinking so much about what Dave said, because I used to say it. I used to feel this way about Mike James, and you're included in this part because I used to never understand. This is how badly I felt about myself. Me and Mike were really close for years and years. And it meant a lot to me. He still means a lot to me. I don't care what happens. He does. I love the man. But I couldn't believe that someone as cool as Mike, who was an athlete and successful and handsome and a good dad and all the stuff he was, I couldn't believe he would be friends with a guy like me. I couldn't understand. And then he introduced me to you and BJ and Endos and a lot of people. And I thought, I don't belong being friends with these people. I'm not at their level. Why would they hang out with me? Why would they care about me? Why would they think I was okay? That's how badly I feel about myself. I couldn't believe that. And it made me feel good because when I was Mike's buddy, I was kind of elevated a little bit, like, oh, well, that's Sean's with Mike. We got to be careful there, like he's with Mike and he's his buddy. And it made me feel really good. It made me feel really good.
The reality of it is nobody was doing any charity work for you. You were there because you deserved to be there. You were there because you brought what you brought. You brought your honesty. You brought your integrity. You brought your loyalty that you've talked about, as being your number one thing. You brought those things and people see that. It's the time that we're spending, outside of relationships, the time that we're spending on our own, where we're driving in our truck or whatever, where we start to like go into this space of I'm not good enough. I don't have money. I don't have, you know, a great relationship or as good a relationship as I want to have with my son. I've made these mistakes. But again, we've talked about this on previous podcasts. A lot of that stuff is from your past, and some of it is from your future. But the reality of you know, how we should try to think is really in the present moment. Like we really, again, and it's the philosophy of AA. I mean, I really think it's probably could be a life philosophy for so many people. All we really have is today. So what are we going to do today to feel good, to feel happy, to feel better about ourselves, to make some progress, to move forward? You know, we talked about it on a couple weeks ago, on the sales episode, we talked about resting on your laurels. And look, if you're just resting on your laurels, you're not improving. You're just in a state of complacency. So to me, it's the practices, the daily routines that need to change in order to change your mindset.
Yeah, and I've been failing in that. I've been failing me and you. I mean, you have made, we talk about stuff and you do it. I talk about it and then I go right back to the old way. I don't do anything. And I don't know what's wrong with me, Chris. I don't know why I'm not doing more to improve it. I want to, in my heart, I want to. But then I get off this podcast and off the texts and then I'm just like, oh, fuck, how am I going to pay the government back? They're calling me right now. They're all over me. And, you know, what am I doing wrong? This, what's going wrong here? Oh, how am I going to get this done? And it just, I get wrapped up in all the bullshit. And
I had some of that stuff after the last couple of years of my addiction were very difficult. And I spent money that I didn't have and I was in trouble. It was amazing. I had to get on phone calls with some, you know, credit card companies and different things. And I was just honest. I said, look, I've been an alcoholic for 2 years. I've spent money that I didn't have. And, you know, it was amazing how people responded to that. You know, I'm so sorry for you. Let's try to work something out. Let's try. Like, there is compassion in everything. People I think the government, maybe sometimes people aren't. Right. But you get to the right person.
I got the right person. Out. The government does this thing where they every 6 months they give you somebody new because they don't want you developing a relationship with somebody. Yeah. So the last lady I had was just like you said. She was empathetic. She was nice. We made a plan. I kept it to the T. Well, yeah. My wife kept it to the T, let's be honest, but she kept it to the T. But now I got some new guy.
Yeah.
And I can't even speak badly about him. I can't get up the nerve to even call him back. I get so scared. I can't even find the courage to call him because I don't want to, but I have to, because if you ignore them, you're really going to be in trouble. So I have to find the courage, like probably today I have to call this person. But
so we talked about this a bit yesterday in our gratitudes. Most depression is rooted in either fear, guilt, or shame.
That's the trifecta,
right? So fear of what you think might be the outcome versus what, and that's about the future, because you're concerned of what might happen. I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. The Mark Twain quote, I've had a great many problems in my life, most of which never came true. Right. Because we get in our head, we get fearful. And I couldn't help but breaking out the big book this morning because here's my big book. It's got some of my chips on it. So because when, you know, and the big book can apply to anyone. You don't have to be an alcoholic or an addict. There are certain steps that you go through that are very, very enlightening. We talked about, enlightenment, getting lighter, not feeling heavy. Number four is huge. It's you made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And in that, when you do it, you identify things that you've done wrong in your life And then you look at the root or the cause of them. So, you know, when I went through that, and it ties into it ties into resentments as well. So when I went through that, I had a lot of resentment towards my dad because I felt like he abandoned us when I was a kid. Now, when I was young, he would go on these long trips to Europe. He would say, like, I was like 8, 9. He would say, okay, you're the man of the house now. Like, you take care of everything. And I'm like, you know, I've mentioned this. I'm like 8 or 9. How am I going to be the man of the house? So it was very resentful. But when I looked at that, it was about fear, because I was scared, because I don't know how to be a man. I'm 9. What am I supposed to do with this?
I agree.
I realized that it was about fear of not knowing what to do, but it turned into a resentment. But when I looked at that, I thought I had to look at it and say to myself, my dad went off to work because he wanted to provide for our family. That is what his job required. So once I could let that go, I was like, well, why, you know, I don't resent him for that anymore. It was just fear. It was fear. Right. And so when we slowly get rid of that fear, then we're able to handle things in a loving place. It was in the gratitude yesterday. The opposite of fear is love. Like if you come at it in a loving place, in a heartfelt place, you get on your phone call today, you try to be as loving and honest and open as you can without that fear, I think good things will happen. Things like, and this is the mindset, but you know, and then again, going back, we made a list of all people we had harmed and we became willing to make amends to them all. And that process is incredible. You know, you talked just a moment ago about, you know, having an argument with your son. I think that there's a wonderful opportunity for you to make an amends, to go to him and say, listen, this has been bothering me in my heart. I've had a lot of sadness around this. I feel this, this, and this. I just want to talk to you about it. And I want you to understand that this is where it came from for me. And I want to resolve this. I just want, you know, you don't have to, you just apologize. And when I did that in the steps, it was a wonderful process. I mean, I called people that I hadn't talked to in a while. I communicated with people that I went to university with 30 years ago, and they were so happy to hear from me. And they were like, I'm so proud of you. I so much appreciate that you're just even doing this. Like the fact, like most people would just never address it. They would just let it eat them up. And maybe that other person would, you know, have this, you know, resentment towards you, but I did it. And it was enlightening. I felt like I was dragging around these chains, and then I cut them off and I could walk away. But it's never over. The thing is, I need to do this every day. I need to do this every day. And because a resentment will come up today. Maybe, maybe not. Some fear will come up today. So then I ask myself, where is this fear coming from? Why is it here? And can I resolve it today before I go to bed and wake up with a clear conscience? We talked about the greatest thing that you could have would be peace of mind. Mm. This is the way. As you know, yeah. I love that quote, and you do too.
This is the way.
From The Mandalorian. This is the way, and there is a way, but you have to put the practices into place. But it only has to be for today. You don't have to worry about whether you're going to do it tomorrow. You don't have to, you can forget about the fact that you didn't do it yesterday. If you do it today, you're making progress. That is like,
well, I've told you this before. Depression with me is I wake up, my eyes open.
Yeah.
I'm happy for a couple minutes. And then I go, oh, right.
Yeah.
This is my life. This is my, And I just go, oh, fuck, you know? And I start going through the motions. I take care of my dog and I make my wife a coffee and I try to smile and be nice. But in my mind, I'm just like, oh, you know? And then I have this other thing that hits me. I call it the Sunday night blues. And it's been happening for 10 years or more. Sunday around 6 p.m., this wave comes over me, Chris, and I'm not lying. I'm not bullshitting. It makes I feel suicidal. It just, it's like, it's, and it's a physical feeling. It just goes whoosh. And I'm like, oh, and it's like all hope, happiness is driven out of my body. And I think, yes, part of it's because tomorrow's Monday and I got to deal with my life again. Sunday, I don't have to so much.
Right.
But it's more than that. It's not just been like, oh, God, it's just, you know, another Manic Monday, the Bangle song. You know, it's not that. It's more than that. And I don't know what the answer is. I got, you know, drugs fucked up a lot of my brain, right? I mean, it did. Sure. I'm not the Sean Pauly I probably should be today, you know? But I am the Sean that I am.
No one is the person they were 10 years ago. No one is. So you can't go back and like relive that. You have to just press on. And I'm sure that's very real for a lot of people, the Sunday night blues, like, oh God, I have to go to work. But then I would only say, ask yourself, what can you do to change that? You know, what can I do today to change how I feel tomorrow? And it's a pursuit of happiness. Like, it's a pursuit of things that fulfill you. You know, in the definition, it describes the empty feeling, right? You and I both know that the podcast, it fills us up when we do it, right? The emptiness almost, it's like it's filling up. Like we're adding fuel to our gas tank, right? But when your gas tank is on empty and you're riding around on your motorcycle and you're 200 miles from a gas station, you're going to be pretty fucking worried. You're like, oh man,
I'm scared.
Oh, you know, it's about filling up that gas tank all the time, right?
And the problem is if you don't, you drag other people down. Do you know how many times I've heard my beautiful wife say, well, obviously you're not happy with me. You're not happy with being married to me. I'm not enough for you. And what she doesn't understand, or maybe she does, but she has never been the problem. She's been the one northern light that I lock onto. She is the one good part of my life, but I feel so bad that I have let her down so many times that it just piles on again, you know? So, like, we're not in this venture alone, right? If I was just on my own, but I worry about my wife and my kids and my friend. I worry about how I'm affecting other people. And then that wears down on me and it makes it worse again. Like, it is a vicious cycle, man.
So a couple takeaways from that. The reality is we are in this on our own.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we are. It's very like what I hear you saying, and look, I've done it for most of my adult life. You know, we talked about our depression date. Mine's probably about 17 years ago. It was probably after the breakup of my first divorce. That's when I started.
I was going to ask you, by the way, we just.
Yeah, I know you were, but just circling back. But
I love the birds, by the way.
Yeah. Can you hear them? Yeah.
Oh my God. I thought you were playing a bird soundtrack. That's
robins, cardinals. Yeah.
They're going to be on my grateful list today.
Awesome.
Your bird. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. It's all right. I think the reality is, and this is something that I've been processing for the last little bit, is that we have to love ourselves. If we don't love ourselves, then we cannot truly love another person. We can't. You can, this is a fake it till you make it. You can show up in a certain way, but certain people will require you to love yourself more than others. And if you can't meet someone in a relationship, maybe that you're in a way that fulfills them, it won't work. It won't. And there are a lot of books on codependency. There are a lot of codependent people who they act, this is the outside stimulation. It's almost an addictive quality. They're looking for someone else to provide the love that they need. But the reality is until you love yourself, you know, truly and wholly, it's going to be really hard to turn up and be as loving and supportive as people really need you to be. And I was thinking about the, it's a cartoon. I don't know if it's Bugs Bunny, but you know, when he's got like the little, it might have been Tom and Jerry. He's got like the devils on
Donald
his shoulder.
Duck used to do it too.
Yeah. You know, there are always going to be, and this is the ego. This, they're always going to be the devil and the angel, right? So the question that you, I think you can ask yourself on a daily basis is, which one am I listening to more? Like, what I really want to do is starve the devil with all this negative talk. I really want to feed the angel and lift myself up, have this. And I've started doing it. We've talked about it in the past. I've sent you stuff. Positive self-affirmation in the morning is huge for me. I pray and I meditate. Those are three things that I know that if I don't do them, my day is not going to go as well. I watched I can't tell you. I mean, Instagram, for me, Instagram, I really, really enjoy Instagram because I can moderate what I see. There is so much great stuff, positive affirmation stuff. There's so much stuff for men that are struggling, for like so much. I can scroll, like if I'm scrolling for 20, 30 minutes, I am getting great information from that platform. And I watched one yesterday, and she's a world famous psychologist therapist. I think her name is Sarah Hay. She says, get up in the morning. The first thing you do, I don't care what it is, you get out of bed, you walk straight to the mirror in your bathroom, and you tell yourself you love you 20 times. Or I love myself. I love myself. I love myself. Just repeat it. If you can do it at lunch, do it again. If you can do it in the evening before, I'm telling you, man, these things, these practices, it's fake it till you make it. Like, you will believe it. It is an incredible thing just to be able to change the way you think about yourself in a small incremental way every day. I sent you the other one. I'm going on a little bit here, but I'm on a roll. The other one I sent you not that long ago was that happiness scale. Do you remember?
Yes. Yeah, that was wild.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's 22 things. At the top, it's number one is joy, appreciation, empowerment, feeling empowered, freedom, and love. That's number one. Okay. At the very bottom of the scale, fear, grief, depression, despair, powerlessness.
Oh my gosh.
So on the scale, like, and there's 22 other ones. Number two is passion. Number three is enthusiasm. Number four is positive expectation and belief. Five is optimism. Six is hopefulness. Seven is contentment. Eight is boredom. And then we start getting into these different colors: doubt, worry, blame, discouragement, anger. I'm telling you, like, if you want to do one thing today, print that thing off, tape it to your mirror in your bathroom or beside your bed and read it and decide which, like, just try to decide which one you want to achieve. If you can stay in 1 to 8 every day, your life is going to be good.
Well, I'm going to try those things you just said. I am going to try to do it. I'm going to do it. I always say I'm going to try and I don't do it. By the way, we're still two old guys trying to do a podcast that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Look, I always want to preface this. We don't, like, we're just offering advice. Like, I think
absolutely, but I,
things are good, but there's just advice
on a technical thing. Next, if you ever have anything you're going to, you like that, I could put that on the screen. I could have shared that and showed people. I like to do kind of stuff like that. And that's bad on me, but we should do that in the future.
I think we should for sure.
But that list, I did look at that list and I was impressed, but like everything with me, I go look at it, I believe it, and then I forget about it and I move on. You know,
you just get back into your routine.
But the opposite of what you just said, do you know how many times I've looked in the mirror, especially when I was an addict, and just went like, you piece of shit. Like, you are such a piece of shit. So you imagine how many times I've ingrained that in myself.
Well, but that's in the past.
Wow.
You know, that's in the past. So everyone who is in addiction, everyone who's in depression, you know, would of course say, I hate myself. And this is exactly what I said about Eckhart Tolle. He had separated himself. He was two completely separate people to the point where he hated himself and who he had become. But he recognized that that wasn't actually who he was. He basically gave up everything he had and he went and he sat on a park bench every day, all day long for 3 months. And then ended up, he started to write a book. He's now a world renowned speaker. You know, he's done TED Talks. He Circles the Earth, talking about his Power of Now books. He was exactly where anyone who's experienced depression has been. So he's a shining example of how, yeah, you can get there, but you can get out of it. And it's all about your ego and your mind and how you talk about yourself. And
if you ever catch yourself, I've caught myself and might be there now, where you get comfortable in your depression. Like, I'm almost scared to feel better. That sounds ridiculous. And I get
to feel happy.
You like empathy. You like sympathy. And that is the worst thing in the world. I don't want to be that person, Chris. I'm admitting because we're being honest. But
yeah.
I caught myself in these terrible things where when I had a thing bolted to my leg for 7 months with wires and bolts on my leg and terrible pain and everything else. But you know what? Everyone felt bad for me. Everyone held the door for me. I had to drive the electric cart around Costco. But everyone was like, oh. And I got used to it.
Yeah.
And when I took it off, it was like, I was so happy it was off. But all of a sudden I was just, oh, no one gives a shit anymore. You know?
Yeah. And you know, like, it's amazing
weird.
How you can sit. No, it's not weird at all. It's actually, I'm going to call you out on this. It's incredibly selfish. But the reality is, like the attention because
I did.
Again, in this, look, this, obviously I'm not a therapist, but I do work with a therapist, and I'm talking about this kind of stuff with him because the reality of what happened with my dad, especially, was that I felt abandoned. I felt abandoned by him. And I also felt like he didn't praise me enough. He wasn't an emotional man. He wasn't a loving man. I could count on one hand how many times I hugged him when I was young. Like, I don't remember it. Maybe it's more. But so when we have that abandonment feeling, we're looking for attention that we didn't get when we were a kid. Like, we are as adults. And, you know, it's just like, it's a strange place because you realize that you're looking for that attention. But it is really selfish, like, because
selfish.
I mean, selfishness isn't,
I know it is.
It's about ego. It's about what you think you need. So
it's hard when you catch yourself doing something that you don't want to be doing, but I'm being honest. I'm just being honest. I know it's shitty, but I'm telling you the truth. And it's like, you know, when I was in the hospital with my strokes and when I was in detox, those were terrible places, but part of it, I was happy because I didn't have to worry about anything.
Absolutely.
All of a sudden, I've been a father since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I've been worried about my family. I love my family so much. And I've been worried about them. I've always thought I was going to fail them.
Yeah.
And I was like, all of a sudden, I'm in a hospital. I can't do anything. Like, I've had a stroke. And the nurses are taking care of me. And I'm not feeling guilty I'm not taking care of things. I can't. I literally can't. And it was like I could relax for a minute. Like, I could just relax. Now, I was on the phone telling people, you know, I was still trying to do business like an asshole, but that's who I am. I'm just so, I mean, I had a thing bolted to my leg. I didn't even want to tell people because I thought I'd be a failure. Oh my God, man.
I know. And
everybody's going to kill me.
I felt the same way in my recovery because it became just a singular focus. I didn't have to think about other things. You know, I just was like, I'm just focusing on my sobriety. And that was, it was enlightening because we are thinking and focusing on a lot of different things every day. But reflecting on that, I realized that if I kind of drill down and I do, in the moment, in each moment, try to like just have a singular focus. My singular focus right now is talking to you. When I get off the phone or when I get off the podcast, my singular focus will be to drive to work. My singular focus will be to do the work. And it's in those moments where you're just sort of, you're really simplifying things. You know, I went for a bike ride this morning. I just singularly focused on the bike ride and I focused a little, you know, I focused on the birds and there were rabbits running, but I wasn't in my head about worrying about what am I doing later today? What am I doing tomorrow? What am I? So,
right.
You know, again, it's, it, it, there is a relief in sort of just, and I'm going to hammer home again, just being in the now and living in today. And I'm not saying you have to plan for the future. Of course you do, but
not at the expense of today.
No, because I mean, you and I, whatever, I mean, this is real. We could die in our sleep tonight. Like how do I want to make sure that I'm showing up in a loving way for myself today and a loving way to everyone around me, to the best of my ability?
I don't know. I I haven't slept in my bed for 2 years.
Yeah.
I sleep in a recliner, and it was physical for a while when I had that thing on my leg.
Yeah.
I've talked to therapists and they go, why don't you go back to bed? And I don't know why, Chris. I know this sounds like idiotic.
Is your mattress shitty or something?
No, it's not shitty. It's a beautiful Kingsdown mattress. It's one of the best. And I've started calling my recliner room my room and that my wife's room. And like my bed is there and she sleeps on her side. And I look over and like my side hasn't been touched in 2 years. And it's like,
what's the root of that? Let me ask you that. Why are you choosing that?
I don't know. I feel like I'm punishing myself. Like I don't deserve to go to bed or something, you know, like I don't know what it is. I don't know. Cause I'll say to my wife every night, she kind of just smiles at me and gives me a kiss. She's not mad about it anymore. I say, I really am going to try to come to bed tonight.
Yeah.
I am. I promise. I'm just going to watch TV for a while. And she goes, yeah, okay.
Like, yeah.
She knows I'm not coming, but
would you be happier if you did?
Oh, I think so. I miss, are you kidding? I love laying next to my wife. Now, my wife has gone through a part in her life where she gets hot. And she doesn't really want me touching her anymore. That's a physical thing. But I do miss sleeping next to my wife. I love my wife. I mean, but I think there's something there too that
you're feeling shame.
I don't know. I think it's shame. I think it's a lot of things. I think it's a lot of things.
You're asleep. So at least when you're asleep, you don't have to worry about your shame and guilt and all that shit.
Yeah.
Why don't you just commit to doing it tonight? Just commit.
Well, I can promise one night. I can do one night.
I'm going to call you on it. I'm going to call you in the middle of the night, FaceTime you, and see if you're laying in your bed.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to put a live camera on my room for the whole night, but I'm not going to tell my wife.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny. I texted you yesterday, and that wasn't something I'd made up, but my God, when I was talking about depression, I heard someone talking about it. Somebody famous, I forget who, and they said it was like being the worst homesick you've ever felt, but you're still at home.
Yeah.
And my God, that described depression to me perfectly.
Oh, I've had that. I've had that too. I had that at the tail end of my second marriage. I literally, when my workday was over, I didn't want to go home.
Right.
And the reason ultimately that I realized that I didn't want to go home is I just wasn't showing up the way I needed to show up. I wasn't, I was too wrapped up in myself. And I did. I liked who I was while I was at work, but as soon as I had to go home, I didn't like that. I did not like that. And that's a terrible place to be, man. That's really a lot. There's a lot of sadness and there's a lot of pain in that. And, you know, again, I think that now that I've put in these certain practices and I hear you saying them too, I'm able to identify my state of depression. I'm able to identify my sadness. And I'm able to get rid of it much quicker.
Right.
Whereas there were certainly times, you know, I mean, after my dad passed away, that whole week of the Masters, like everybody in my family was like, don't talk to Chris. I was just sad. I was drinking. I was in the den watching them. I like, just don't even talk to Chris. And that's so terrible. Like people like avoiding me.
Yeah.
And I realized that when I went through my resentments and my moral inventory, I realized that I had broken a lot of relationships with people who love me to this day, but who I'm not very close with because I just wasn't showing up very well. You know, I was that guy. Oh, he drank too much. He did this. He did that.
But it's the not showing up. Man, I like the way you said that, not showing up.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to dwell on my friend Mike or my boss Mike, whatever you want to call him, but Listen, Mike's not perfect by any means, but I can't blame him for the fact that we're not close anymore because I stopped showing up. And I don't mean doing my work.
Yeah, I know.
But fear led to that.
Yes.
I was so scared that
yeah.
if I was talking to him, that I was letting him down. I was so scared I was letting him down that I started avoiding him. And then it just we grew apart. So I can't blame him for that. I can still mourn it though. I mourn it. Like I mourn like miss. Like I feel bad. And listen, I'm not saying I don't mean he won't talk to me. He's not my friend, but we were really close. And
yeah, look, I'm the same with Mike. We're not that, you know, we're not very close. I know that he loves me. I know that he cares about me, and I feel the same, but you know, and I remember you telling me about how you used to talk every day.
Mm.
And I remember how that slowly kind of left your life. And again, I hope you take this in the best possible way. I feel like it probably became a bit of an unhealthy relationship for him.
It was. It
because,
was.
You know, you were bringing a lot of your pain. And
I was in a mess. And
it's one thing to ask maybe your partner, like your significant
wife.
Other to do that, your wife. But it's another thing to ask a friend, and it's a lot. And some people, like, they will separate themselves from that. And that's a natural protective mechanism.
Oh, absolutely. He had to get away from me. I understand. It still hurt me though.
Of course it did. But I think that there's plenty of room for you to rebuild that and to get back to that and find a mutual place where you both are happy to do it. You're accepting, but it really does. It requires work from you. And it requires work from everyone. If there is an imbalance in a relationship, it's, again, I can go back to the scale. You know, if Mike's at number one and you're at number 22, how are you going to hang out?
We're
like,
not.
It's like pretending that, you know, I played t-ball really well when I was eight, so I'm going to join the major leagues. This is it. Like,
it's not going to stop.
You're out of your mind. Like, you. So
well, we were at the end of, like, for example, I was at his condo, his beautiful $1 million condo downtown.
Yeah.
And I was there. I was there with you. We went up to breakfast, the three of us, one day.
I remember.
One day I was there with him, and he was on the phone. They were arguing over their boathouses with his new rich neighbor, and I was happy to be there. I went over on the deck, and I was this close from jumping off of it.
Yeah.
That's how far apart we were.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't know that, but I mean, Chris, like, I called my cousin while I was there. Mike doesn't know this, but because I was going to jump off Mike's balcony. Like,
thank you for admitting that, Sean. That's a lot to admit. A lot.
And I'm not just saying that, like, oh, I might have done it. Like, I was going to do it. And I called my cousin crying. Mike was on the phone, and he had to talk me down.
That's a state of real hopelessness and despair. And that's at the bottom of the scale, man.
That's where I was.
Look, you know, there's a lot of talk, if you want to drill into it. A lot of people talk about vibration. You know, we all have a vibration about us, whether it comes from our heart or our soul or whatever you want to talk about. But when you're at the top of that scale, people want to be around you. You are vibrating at a high, like, beautiful place. But when you're at the 22, man, you are not. Like, people are like, whoa, I'm just going to stay away from that.
I've seen it. I remember when I was at the top, and, you know, I was winning Salesman of the Year, and I was, you know, people would call Mike and say, well, Sean's the best rep down here. And, you know, I was grooving and moving, and I loved it. But as I fell into depression, and a lot of it was from not dealing with my mom's suicide and letting that trauma just beat me down and beat me down and beat me down. And then, you know, having health problems and addiction and all that, nobody wanted to be around me. I was toxic. I can't blame those people. I remember when Mike called me on it. I'll never forget it. He called me, and I said something about, like, it was a bad moment. I'm not going to discuss it, but I said, yeah, but man, you're my best friend. And he goes, man, if this is a friendship, you are not being a very good friend. He said, I started crying. It crushed me, but he wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
But I, to hear those words.
Yeah. That's tough.
Fuck.
That's,
It was
that
hard.
Takes a lot. That takes a lot of self-reflection. But I think that the reality of it is, you beat yourself up over it because you think it's your fault. But I think a lot of it, it really isn't. I think a lot of it is your experiences. I think, we're talking about depression. I think anyone whose mother committed suicide and who found her and who hasn't dealt with that is going to be living in a significantly depressed state. I can't tell you what to do, but I could honestly tell you that therapy should almost become a number one priority for you. And I know it's not real quite in the cards right now or whatever, but man, oh man, until you start addressing some of that stuff, you're going to be dragging that thing around like a chain. I know that I'm talking about coming to see you. I think going through the steps is an important process too. I think getting rid of your moral inventory, making some amends. These are really important stuff, because that is, no one can fault you for being depressed as a result of having that experience in your life, man. I can't even imagine. I can't, Sean. No, and I honestly respect you and love you so much, because that is a significant, significant experience that it no one can diminish. So
no,
dude, you're doing amazing considering that. I really like.
Well, that's nice of you to say. The problem is you don't deal with it. You know, some people look at me and say, Sean, it was 21 years ago. You know how many times, nights, it's like it was yesterday? Like,
might as well have been. It might as well
have been. Besides your kids committing suicide, I can't think of a worse thing than your mother.
There's like, nothing there.
And
no,
then you find out truths, and you find, and then there's guilt, and then you ruin your kids' relationships with yourself and your wife because you're just dealing with this shit. But you know what? That's probably a good place to stop, and it's also a good segue, because next week's our 10th podcast, which I'm very proud of. I read that like 80 or 90% of podcasts never make it to 10, so we're gonna do it. And next week's gonna be a tough one. We're talking about suicide and death.
We are.
And I promise to anybody listening, we're not gonna be this depressing every week. We are gonna find some happier topics. But I think you and I always try to bring the positivity out of the negative topics too. I was gonna call this episode depression. I'm starting to feel like we should call it Mike, but we talked a little bit more about Mike than I meant to. I apologize. I didn't mean to do that, but anyway.
But we're talking about our own experiences, and you were talking about healthy relationships, and that's you know, it's wonderful that you're addressing that you're talking about things that are important to you. I know that it's a little, of course it's heavy, but it's real. It's real, and it's real for a lot of people. I hope that we offered a little bit of insight as to how you can improve, you know, the feeling of sadness, hopelessness, whatever, every day. There are some little things that you can do. I'm incredibly grateful for being here with you, man.
Me too. I was going to say, if I could just talk to you 24 hours a day on this podcast, that'd be fine, man. I'd be fine.
And, well, 16 hours and then 8 hours sleep in your bed.
I don't know. I think it'd be easier to talk to you for 16 hours and 8 hours in that bed. But anyway.
Yeah, we might get a little burnt out, but yeah.
I am very much looking forward to our together podcast we're going to do when you get here. I'm very excited about that. And hopefully, it'll be a special event. I don't know. Maybe we'll have some cake or something. Who knows?
That'd be great. That'd be great.
All right. Well, listen, I could keep talking as usual, but time does get away and we both have jobs to do and lives to live. But you know what? We've said this on other podcasts. There can be a part two to this one. I found everyone we've done, I feel like there should be a part two. But you know what? That's good, because there's only so many subjects, but I do want to circle back to some of these ones we've done. So this will be one of them, I think.
Well, we could maybe in a month or so, we could do a review of the practices that we're doing to improve our depressed state.
And if I've done nothing, everyone will say, he is full of shit. He really is full of shit. But
I'm happy to say that at least in this moment, I'm not depressed, and I feel very grateful for our podcast. I feel grateful to have you as my best friend, and I'm very happy You're my best friend too, to talk about this.
It does cheer me up. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad you're doing okay. I was a little worried about you this week. I know you were not feeling the best all week, but I'm glad you're.
No, I got in my head. I was beating myself up a bit, but I'm okay with who I am today. So I'm gonna keep that thought in mind.
All right. Well.
All right, brother.
Have a good day.
Love you, man.
I love you too.
You too.
One of these weeks, I'll hit that mark right. And I'll remember to have the volume up, and I'll do everything. One of these weeks, I won't mess up the music.
We'll see. Don't beat yourself up.
They don't need a man who's got it made. Always looking for that renegade.
Okay.
I calls it like a season. Spade is a spade. A good man is a thing of yesterday.